Once again tonight, we'd like to turn to the book of Luke, chapter 15. I want to read the same verses that we read this morning. Luke 15, read verses 11 through verse 24. He said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me that portion of goods that falleth to me.' And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. When he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him unto his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. When he came to himself, he said, 'How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and was alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry." It opens here in verse 11. A certain man had two sons. What a blessing to have children. When these two sons were born, no doubt it was a time of joy. No doubt it was a time of that hope filled the hearts of these parents. A certain man had two sons. And as these two sons were raised, there were times of fun and laughter. Times of smiles, many good times in the raising of children. As these two sons were raised, there were no doubt those precious times, little children sitting on the laps of their parents, just trying to get as close as they possibly can. Expressing their love in their own childlike way. As these two sons were raised, there were those times, no doubt, as it is with raising all children, they were filled with inquisitive questions, and they believed that mom and dad had all the answers. You can tell them anything, and they believe it. And they believed that you were right. As these two sons were being raised, no doubt there were those special times of teaching them, instructing them, teaching and instructing them about just everyday life and the things of God. And it's a very special time when children want to learn and to hear about the Lord. And they love to sing about God. A certain man had two sons. And as these two sons were being raised, there was the joy of being able to provide for their needs. The joy of being able to give them comfort and just to be there for them. You think of the joy being able to read to them and being able to pray with them and to hear them pray, again, in their own childlike faith. Nothing quite like listening to a child pray. And I think as you listen to a child pray, it can teach you a lot about how we are to approach the Lord. A certain man had two sons. Just like with raising children, there are those, you tuck them in at night and you hear them say, "I love you, Daddy. I love you, Mommy." Those are precious times. Those are wonderful, wonderful times. But as in life, the story goes on. And these two sons would eventually be old enough to go out on their own, or at least think they were old enough to go out on their own. And with a spirit of absolute defiance, the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me." That precious little child that loved you so much, wanted to tell you everything in their own little way, now spews out words of venom. "Father, give me." And the parent is left to wonder, who is this person? Who is this person? This is not the child that I raised. Who is this person? And in our text, we read that a few days later, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, away from God. This child, verbally and by his actions, was saying to his father, "I reject you. I reject your values. I reject your lifestyle. And I reject your God. And it's my life, and I can live my life the way I want to. And there's nothing you can do to stop me." And as that younger son made his demands and gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living, all the sadness of the parent, all the sadness of this father's heart, the fear to watch him go down that road, heading toward a far country, knowing that he is headed for ruin. There's fear for that child. The child doesn't have enough sense to fear. The hurt, the disappointment, the pain that this father felt as he watched his son and his defiant attitude, and as he watched him head down a path of ruin. A certain man had two sons, and now he is the father of a prodigal child. This is not how the father had envisioned it. This is not how you plan it. There are many sitting here right now who have had prodigal children, currently have prodigal children. They may be 60 years old, or may yet have prodigal children. And that is what we want to speak upon this evening. Parents of prodigal children. When that child And I'm talking to God's people, Christian parents. When that child that you tried to raise in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that child that used to love for you to read them Bible stories, used to love to sing the choruses, when that child grows up and verbally and by their actions say, "I reject your biblical values. I reject your lifestyle, and I reject your God." And that child becomes a prodigal. That's very painful. It's one of the most painful things, one of the most painful experiences. I didn't say it was the most. I said it's one of the most painful experiences, something that's very grievous to the heart of a mom and dad that love the Lord and love their children. It is heart-wrenching. It is a heart-wrenching experience for a parent. So what is a parent to do? Well, if you listen to the prodigal child, you just accept me the way I am and you just agree with me and we'll just continue on. But is that what the Bible says? What is a parent to do when they have prodigal children? And again, that's what we want to consider this evening. Number one, what are you to do if you have prodigal children? First and foremost, make sure that you are right with God as a parent. Parents of prodigal children must realize that their child is under the attack of Satan. But don't forget, so is the parent. If you have a prodigal child, again, doesn't matter how old they are, doesn't matter how long they've been prodigal. If you have a prodigal child, they are under the attack of Satan, and so are you. And you better realize that. Parents of prodigal children must realize their child is in great danger. Great danger. But so are parents. Parents are in danger of spiritual decay also. They are in danger of spiritual ruin. Yes, if you have a prodigal child, you need to realize that that child is surrounded by very carefully laid traps of the devil. But so is the parent. The parent also has these traps all around them. The parent must realize that prodigal children are a test of their own faith. It is a trial to our faith. It is also for our own spiritual growth. Prodigal children. The parent must realize that the best way to be able to properly help the child that has gone astray, the best way for their parent to help is for the parent to stay close and connected with God. For the parent to have an ongoing relationship with God. The last thing that a prodigal child needs is a prodigal parent. And it happens all the time. Children go away, and parents get so upset that they don't take care of their own spiritual needs. And now you not only have prodigal children, you have prodigal parents as well. You got a terrible, terrible situation. And I'm here to tell you tonight, if you are not spiritually right, you cannot help your prodigal child. Not the way they need it. Oh, you might be able to help them as far as the world's definition of help. But biblically, you cannot help them if you do not stay right with the Lord. Prodigal children do not need their parents to be their buddy. They do not need their parents to be their accomplice. They need their parents to be steadfast for the truth. They need their parents to be right with God. Is that what they think they need? Oh, no, that's not what they think they need, but that's what they need. A parent must realize that in this difficult time, and it's a very difficult time, a very trying time to have prodigal children. But moms and dads must realize that they stand in need of great strength. They stand in need of heavenly wisdom. And they must saturate their hearts. And they must saturate their minds with the Word of God. Parents have to stay right with the Lord. When a child becomes prodigal, there are many feelings on the parent's part of sadness, of fear, rejection. People say, well, they're not really rejecting me. Oh, yes, they are. Yes, they are. I don't mean to burst your bubble, but yes, they are. They're rejecting everything you have taught them. That means they're rejecting you. That means they're rejecting your God. There are those feelings of rejection. There are feelings of disappointment. Feelings of hurt. Yes, even feelings of anger and bitterness. And there may even be times of despair. So what is a parent to do? Stay right with God. Draw near to God so that you do not become crippled spiritually by these feelings. Stay right with God. Draw near to God so that you do not fall under the control of any of these feelings. It is important. It is important to stay right with God. It is important to stay near to God so that it does not become about us. You listen to some parents of prodigal children, and I've got news for you. It's about them. You better stay right with God so that it doesn't become about us. And you have to stay right with God in order to keep our priorities right. And our priority is not the prodigal. That's not the priority. The priority is God. The priority is to stay right with God. That's the priority. Secondly, not only must the parents stay right with God, they need to protect their marriage. If husbands and wives are not right with God, the death of a child, a prodigal child, many other things that would fall under the heading of tragedies. If husbands and wives are not right with God, that event can be absolutely devastating to a marriage. Devastating. Though husbands and wives may be affected differently with the issue of a prodigal child, and more likely than not, they will deal with it differently, internally and vocally, but they're both affected. Don't ever think that because somebody doesn't react the same way you do, it doesn't bother them. Don't be so narrow. And I'm not talking about in a biblical sense there. But both are affected. And they both are feeling heart-wrenching sadness and fear and pain. And neither should have to deal with the issue alone. If you leave your spouse to deal with the issue alone, you will destroy your marriage. You need to talk to each other about their feelings. They need to draw near to God as one, and be there for one another, be on the same page. Because that prodigal child, though they may not have much sense, they know when mom and dad are not on the same page, and they'll play that in a heartbeat. You better get on the same page. Forming a united front. And you do not allow Satan to sidetrack you with the prodigal child, so much with the prodigal child, that you neglect your own spiritual condition. Don't you see that is a trick of the devil? And you do not let the devil so sidetracked you with this prodigal child that you neglect your spouse and you neglect your marriage. Not only will your child be destroyed, you will be too. So we need to stay right with God. We need to protect our marriage. Thirdly, we need to protect our family. If there are other children, you had better realize that there are dangers and traps for them as well. The prodigal is not the only one dealing with dangers and traps here. The parents are. Other children are as well. And you'd better realize that they are affected too. You do not allow Satan to so sidetrack you with the prodigal child that you forget or neglect other members of your family. These are all the devil's tactics. Don't throw in the towel concerning your other children. Well, what's the use? Just let them go too. Oh, that's real mature. And that's real loving. Don't throw in the towel. You don't give the devil an inch. You stand. And instead of throwing in the towel, you take the viewpoint of the devil has this child and he's not going to get this one. I'm going to make sure of it. Don't throw in the towel. Fourthly, we need to reject false guilt and confess true guilt. You know, pastors deal with prodigals their whole ministry. I've dealt with prodigals for 36 years. And I can preach a message on the inside the mind of a prodigal. They all think alike. The faces are different, but they're all the same. They all think alike. And they all pretty much do the same thing. I can almost tell you what they'll do next. Prodigals are very, very good at trying to place a guilt trip upon everyone else. I mean, they're experts at it. And Satan also is a master of laying false guilt upon individuals. I believe the reason the devil does it is to conceal real reasons you have for guilt. He gives you some false guilt. You get concentrated on that and ignore the things that you ought to be guilty, that you ought to feel guilty for. This is a trick of the devil. In all the attempts of the prodigal child to make parents feel guilty, and in all of Satan's attempts to conceal real guilt, the parent must reject all false guilt. You do not get boggled down with false guilt. Some examples. Raising your children in church and taking them to Bible conferences is not the reason they are prodigals. Don't fall for that. Trying to instill in your children biblical principles and values is not the reason that they are prodigals. Don't fall for that. I've heard parents say, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have brought them to church so much. Don't be foolish. You have fallen for the devil's trap. Biblical discipline is not the reason for prodigal children. Oh, I know, prodigal children. Well, you just brought me to church so much. They're trying to lay a guilt trip upon you. Don't fall for it. That is not the reason that they are prodigal. Well, you had so many rules. Living separated in godly lives and having rules is not the reason for prodigal children. That's not the reason. Don't fall for that. With all that being said, the parents should confess real guilt and failure. We ought to examine our lives. And in areas where we are truly guilty, in areas where we have truly failed, and believe me, those won't be the areas that the prodigal is telling you about. Those need to be confessed. That's part of being right with God. Fifthly, don't fall into the blame game or the what-if trap. Prodigals are good at playing the blame game. It's never their fault. Never. It's always somebody else's fault. They will always seek to blame someone. And I've seen it happen probably 100 times. If parents aren't careful, they'll fall into the same trap. They'll buy the prodigal's storyline. It's someone else's fault. And parents will begin. They have a prodigal child. That child's living in the far country. So we'll find somebody to blame. We'll blame a pastor that's been dead. He can't answer for himself, so he'd be a good one to blame. Sickening. They'll find something to blame for their child being a prodigal. But I'm going to tell you the truth. Why are children prodigal? Because of their own sinful heart. That's the simple answer. Do not deflect your prodigal's manner of life to Sunday school teachers. Well, if they would have had better Sunday school teachers. Are you that ignorant? I mean, truly, are you that ignorant that you really believe that? Don't try to blame the Sunday school teachers. Don't try to blame the school teachers. Don't try to blame the pastor. Don't try to blame the neighbor. Don't try to blame the other kids. The reason your child is a prodigal is because they have a depraved, sinful, ungodly, wicked, vile heart. Don't blame someone else. That's the reason. Parents must be on guard. The prodigal is going to blame. The first one they're going to blame is the parents. And many times the parents, they don't want to be the blame, so we're going to blame someone. Don't fall into that trap. The prodigal's very good at trying to get you to play the blame game. Before long, parents begin to blame one another. Moms and dads, you can do that if you want to, but I guarantee you it won't bring your prodigal child back. It'll destroy your marriage. You won't have a united front. But it will not bring that prodigal child back. Don't blame one another. Don't allow yourself to get caught up in the what-if game. What if, what if, what if? You can drive yourself crazy. Playing the what-if game. Playing the what-if game will only lead to depression and false guilt and usually into the blame game. Again, in regards to blame and what if things need to be gotten right, get them right. That's the first and foremost thing. Stay right with God. Sixthly, we as parents need to accept that our ministry to our grown children has changed. Your ministry to a grown child is not the same as it was when they were little. It's not the same. Oh, but I miss those days. I want it to be the same. It's not the same. Understand that. Many parents fail to make the transition from having little children to having adult children. Now, as adults, they may be immature. They may make foolish decisions. But regardless, they are not little children. They may think like a child. They may sometimes act like a child. But they are not little children. Make the transition. You can't just kiss their owie now and make it better. That's not going to work. Yet there are parents still trying that. And if you have adult children, or children no longer under your roof, it's no longer your job to be telling them what to do. That's not your job. That was your job while they were under your roof. That is no longer your job. It is no longer your job to tell them how to do everything. Make the transition. It is no longer your job to always be correcting them. It's not your job. It's not your job to make demands of them. I mean, many parents, they do more parenting after their children are grown than they did when their children were children. They've got it backwards. It is no longer your job to tell them everything. I know somebody will say, well, you're still mom and dad. Yes, you are. But your role has changed. Your role has changed. You no longer spank them. Oh, you might want to. But that's not your job anymore. Make the transition. If you have raised them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and you have trained them in the way they should go, it is not your job to continually remind them verbally of what God's Word says. Well, I'm going to give them scripture every time I see them. That's really not your job. It really isn't. And I'm going to tell them what God expects every time I see them. Well, let me tell you something. If you've raised them right, they already know that. They already know that. The greatest influence that you can have upon your adult prodigal children is not so much your words, but your behavior.
and they will test your behavior. They know your buttons, and they will try to anger you, because when you get angry, what does that do in their mind? It justifies their sin that much more. This is how they think. Your actions. You influence them with your behavior, your actions, your life. You point them to Christ with your life. This is the instruction that the Lord, that Peter gave a saved wife to an unsaved husband in 1 Peter 3, verses 1 through 4. He said, you don't have to be quoting Scripture to him all the time. You don't have to be telling him all the time. You live it before him. And I believe that applies to adult children as well. Seventhly, perhaps the hardest of all, let go. The father in the parable did not chase down his son. Well, I love him too much. I can't just let him go. Let go. Let go. If it takes every fiber of your being, and it will, out of love, you let them go. And it will take every fiber of your being. That's why, again, it's important to stay right with God and close to God, because that's where you get your strength. Most parents of prodigals when they hear that the prodigal child has wasted his substance with riotous living, what do? They come to the rescue. Is that what this father did? No. You say, well, he didn't know. I believe he did. Because in verse 30, the son, the elder son, knew that the younger son had spent his substance with harlots. He knew. And I believe somehow the father knew what his son was doing. But he never once ran to his rescue. Parents today, when they hear that the prodigal child has spent all and that there's a mighty famine in the land, who do you think sent that mighty famine? God did. God did. A little more on that in a minute. But we hear that our child has spent all, there's a famine in the land, and they're in want. Here they come. Here comes mom and dad to the rescue. Send them a care package. Send them some money. The truth is, most parents today of prodigals will never allow their children to get in the hog pen. They won't allow it to happen. I love them too much. Is it love for them or is it love for self? Just asking. Examine. Do you love them enough to let go? And to let God send the famine into the land. And have them go down into the hog pen. When the famine's in the land, what was God doing? He was removing all hope. We interfere. We interfere with God's business. I'm not going to allow my child to get down in the hog pen. But don't you see? These are the very things that God uses to bring prodigals home. Let go. Let go. Part of letting go is not to be always interfering with the consequences of sin. Not to interfere with God dealing with them. Eighthly, and this is part of letting go, pray. Verse 20, The father saw the child when he was a great way off. And as we said this morning, I believe that father prayed for his younger son. I believe he prayed that God would get a hold of him. And every day and every evening, he would look out that direction, just hoping. Maybe this will be the day. Maybe this will be the day that he comes home. But I don't believe he ever gave up. I don't believe that father ever gave up. Because to give up is to give up on God. And I don't think he ever gave up. What we need to realize is that God is fully capable of getting that prodigal child's attention. And that ought to be what we're praying. Lord, get their attention. I'm not telling you, Lord, how to get their attention. That's your business. But God, get their attention. And then when God gets their attention by sending a famine into the land, don't you interfere. Don't you come to the rescue. We pray one thing and then we don't try to undo what God does. God is fully capable of getting the attention of any prodigal child. They may have been prodigal for 50 years. God is quite able to get their attention. Don't interfere with the famine that God sends in their lives. Don't try to fix it. God is working. Don't interfere. Let go. Pray. Pray that God will bring them to the end of themselves. You say, oh, I can't stand it. I can't stand to watch it. I can't stand to think about it. I can't stand to see them brought to the end of themselves. Don't you see? That's the only way they're coming home. The only way they're going to stay home. Oh, you can put all the band-aids on it you want. And they'll come home and make your life miserable. And they'll leave soon. Or you can just get out of the way and let God do it. In those times, and there will be times, parents of prodigals, there are times of desperation. You love your child. You don't want to see harm come to them. And there are times when there are those feelings of desperation. But in those times, you do not connive, you do not scheme, and you do not make plans and try to figure out some way to get them back. You pray. The best thing to do in a desperate situation is pray. You pray. And you wait. And then you pray. And you wait some more. And then you pray. And you wait some more. Well, what if nothing happens? Pray again. Wait again. You may not see your child come home in your lifetime. But you ought to spend your lifetime praying for them. You don't stop. And I'm afraid many have. Many have. Perhaps their child has been prodigal for so long and they have built a somewhat good relationship with them and they have forgotten. My child's away from God. My child's prodigal. And they stop to pray. And they stop praying. I don't understand how a parent cannot pray for their children every single day.
whether they're right with God at home or whether they're prodigal. You pray and you pray and you pray. And you don't let Satan whisper to you, it's not working. Because you don't know what God's doing. And if you're praying, He's working on you, keeping you right with the Lord. Don't be embarrassed to ask other people, pray for my son, pray for my daughter. They've wandered away from God. What will people think? What will they think of me as a parent? Is that really the issue? I mean, I sure hope not. Is that the issue? What people might think of you as a parent? You need to get right with God. You need to get over your self-righteousness if that is the issue. Well, what will they think? You have a prodigal that is on a road to ruin, and you're worried what they're going to think about you? How sad. Pray, pray, and pray, and pray, and pray. Go to your grave praying for that prodigal child. You don't stop. Lastly, you keep loving them and keep an open door. You never stop loving them. Now, in a prodigal's mind, at least when they first go prodigal, they equate approval with love. But you see, they're so insane, they don't know the difference. And I'm not being critical. Sin is an insanity. It is insanity. And they no longer know the difference. And I'll tell you something else they're very good at. They're very good at comparing apples with oranges. They're experts at it. And people fall for it. Never stop loving them. Now, in their mind, you don't approve of their riotous living. You don't love them. Your love has got conditions. Oh, my child, you're so confused. You just keep loving them. You keep telling them, I love you. When they try to push your buttons, when they try to do things that just set you off, you say, I'm praying for you and I love you. You won't be the one being infuriated. They will. They can't stand it. They would rather you argue with them. They would rather enter in with a debate. Son, daughter, I love you and I'm praying for you. Conversation's over. Show them love without enabling them in their sin. We can't enable them in their sin. You show them love without approving of their sin. And after they've been a prodigal for many, many years, you do not resign yourself to their sin to the point where you start to put your stamp of approval upon it. And that happens all the time. Time makes people forget a lot of things. Time causes people to become lax in their views. We see it in our society. Back in the early 70s, abortion people were appalled. For the most part, they're not anymore. Same with homosexuality, and on we could go. It's also true of prodigal children. After they've been prodigal for many, many years, many parents resign themselves. Well, that's just the way it is. No. You keep praying that God will get a hold of them.
You get up in the morning and you pray, Lord, whatever they're doing right now, get hold of them. Speak to them, Lord. Prick their hearts. You go to bed at night, Lord, if they're sound asleep, wake them up. Disturb them, Lord. You just keep on praying and keep on praying and keep on praying. And then when they call you and they say, Dad, Mom, I can't sleep. And you say, well, go to the doctor and get a sleeping pill, honey. No, you keep praying, Lord, keep them awake. We interfere. You keep loving them without any setting approval. And you've got to set boundaries. It's not that your prodigal child is never allowed back in your home, but you'd better set some boundaries. You say, well, they're an adult. It's your home. You have the right to set boundaries. And you set boundaries. You don't burn bridges. They can come home anytime they get right. They can come home. And as we've said many times, this prodigal son, he didn't come home with a string of harlots behind him. Dad, here's all my girlfriends. They're going to live with us for a while. Oh, that's okay, son. I'm just glad you're home. That's pitiful. Son, you go right back where you came from. And when you're ready to leave them, you can come home. We've seen children turn into prodigals. Pastoring, we've seen many children turn into prodigals. I think all the time, I probably shouldn't, it's not healthy, but I look at little children, I look at their little hands, I look at their little feet, Lord, please help them. You don't know in 15 years what those little hands might be touching, where those little feet might be going. We've seen it happen many times, we all have, all of us that are old enough. We've watched children grow up, and we've watched them become prodigals, and it's sad. But you know what? I've also seen some come home. And you know what brought every single one of them home? God. God brought them home. And that's the only thing that'll work. Oh, how we need to pray. Every parent here that has a prodigal child, don't stop praying. Don't stop praying for them. This church has many. You watched them grow up. You watched them sing choruses. And now they live ungodly, filthy, vile lifestyles. Pray for them. Pray that God would get a hold of them. That God would stir them. That God would bring them to themselves. Pray. And I think we all need to pray. We have many things to pray for. And one of the things that we need to be praying, especially parents of prodigal children, you need to be praying for your children. Pray for them. Don't stop. And I don't mean to depress you, but you may never see them come home in your lifetime. You may never see them get right. But really, it's not about us. You just keep praying that God will work on them. It may be at your funeral that God works on them. Who knows? But you just pray. You don't stop. You don't give up. Little Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.